Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. We also welcome our viewers because this is a community-supported visual radio station. The video of this program is streaming out live this morning to the KSJE Facebook page, our YouTube channel, and our Twitter account. So we're glad that you are all with us this morning for our discussion about archaeology. My guest, Paul Reed, local archaeologist, is back on the program with some special guests. We'll introduce them to you in just a moment. We'll be talking about archaeology and the indigenous populations. Join us for that conversation starting in the next few moments right here on KSJE. And then later on this morning, we'll be checking in with Thomas Heuser from the San Juan Symphony. Thomas will be giving us a preview of this weekend's concerts in Farmington on Saturday and Durango, Colorado on Sunday. Stay tuned for that this morning at 8:50 a.m. on KSJE. Next hour, Mick Hess will be here with our classical music program, Roving with the Arts. And Mick is playing some more music from the African-American composer, R. Nathaniel Dett. That's coming up today, 9:06 on KSJE. And don't forget, you can also connect with us on our Instagram page, in addition to Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. And if you're a podcast person, many of our local programs are podcasts, and you can find them wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe for free to KSJE, places like iTunes and Spotify and iHeartRadio and much, much more. You can check out maybe a new program that you may have missed recently. Taking a look outside, we'll take a look at Salt Lake City this morning, where there was some snow yesterday, which has turned into our showers here in Farmington this morning, but a nice layer of snow in the Salt Lake area as we take a look at the sunrise over Salt Lake City from a few moments ago. Our forecast here is calling for a day of clouds and showers, a 70% chance of showers in the Farmington area today, with a high only reaching 47 degrees. It's right now 43 outside our studios. Tonight, rain showers continuing, maybe even a mix of some snow, 32 for a low overnight tonight, then winds tomorrow with some decreasing clouds, increasing sunshine on Friday, but a high of only 43 degrees tomorrow, 26 overnight. Sunshine on Saturday with a high of 49, more sun and warmer weather on Sunday with a forecast high of 58, and by Monday, sunshine with a high of 63 degrees. Well, let me turn to my guests who are with me this morning. As I mentioned, we are talking about archaeology this morning, and one of our great guests who's back every month with me, always appreciate it. Paul Reed is here, of course, from Archaeology Southwest. He is joining us by video link from his home in the Taos area. Paul, good morning, and good to have you back, and good to see you.
Good morning, Scott. Glad to be back on, and I looking forward to our discussion.
Yeah, thank you very much, and great to have you with us, of course. Also joining us is Ashley Thompson. She works along with Paul Reed with Archaeology Southwest, and Ashley Thompson is joining us from Tucson, Arizona this morning. Ashley, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you for being with us. Appreciate that very much. And Skylar Begay, our third guest this morning, is on the phone this morning. And Skylar, good morning to you.
Morning, Scott.
Thank you for being with us, everybody. We appreciate it. And so, Paul, let me start with you a little bit about what we've been talking about, you and I, for a couple of programs here, and that is the work of archaeologists with Native American communities and trying to get more input from indigenous peoples as you do some of the work that you all do throughout the world, really. And so kind of bring us a little bit up to speed on some of those past conversations, if you wouldn't mind, to get us started.
Yeah, sure, Scott. You know, what you and I had talked about as we got into the early part of this year was to really have a focus with these monthly shows on the work that Archaeology Southwest is doing and that other groups are doing, really trying to partner in a meaningful way with indigenous communities, with descendant communities, whose heritage really is the subject of what a lot of American archaeology does. So Archaeology Southwest has been in a process for several years now to really try and reorient the way we do our work in a number of ways, one of which is to make it meaningful to descendant communities, to partner with those communities as we begin new work. And even on projects that are underway, we've tried to think of ways to involve indigenous communities in that work and really make it much more meaningful for those communities. And on our side of the fence, really just to enrich the way that we're doing this work and really try hard to step away from our colonial past, you know, as we've talked on the show. So, you know, I think, you know, as I've mentioned on the show before, we're at a very exciting time right now.
Right. And certainly it seems to be a lot more collaboration, a lot more information being shared back and forth, as you and I have talked about. And so Ashley and Skylar, you both are working with Archaeology Southwest, pardon me, and working on ways to increase, I think, collaboration with Indigenous peoples and Native American tribes. And that work I know is ongoing, and you are trying to develop some policies and some documents to follow. And so can we talk a little bit about kind of the process of doing this type of work? Ashley, let's start with you, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. As you two have mentioned, archaeology has kind of a contentious history when it comes to working with tribal nations, especially here in North America. And so moving forward at Archaeology Southwest, the organization really wants to right past wrongs and work with tribal nations on all aspects of our work moving forward. And so, you know, we do research, and Paul works a lot in Chaco, but we have a lot of other projects going on that can and are starting to involve descendant communities whose cultural material we work with. And so I started my job at Archaeology Southwest earlier this year in January 2022. And my position is actually director of the Tribal Collaboration Initiative. And so my coworker and I, Sky Begay, were tasked to come up with a tribal collaboration model, which is basically a philosophy that we hope the organization can follow moving forward in our work with tribes.
Understood. Yeah, go ahead.
And I don't know, Sky, do you want to chime in on that?
Skylar, go ahead. Sure. What's your work about on this?
So my work in the organization revolves a lot more around our advocacy efforts and the protection of public lands. And of course, public lands are indigenous lands. And so we feel it's only right that we include indigenous peoples in the advocacy of those lands and also try to advocate that they have a voice in how those public lands are managed today.
Thank you, Skylar. And I wanted to ask you, too, from some of the things that Paul Reed and I have been talking about, that some of this is brand new work in archaeology. And so does it seem like it's uncharted territory in some cases from some of these things that you're trying to do?
It certainly is uncharted territory for myself. but I think as far as Archaeology Southwest, there's a lot of researchers here and a lot of projects in the past that have gone on that have included Indigenous peoples in really meaningful ways. And that was one of the ways I got involved with the organization in the past myself.
Right. Thank you very much. Paul Reed, let me come back to you a little bit about this work that Ashley and Skylar are doing. Again, this is really important stuff, as we've talked about, you and I, before, about reaching out to Indigenous peoples, tribal governments, and all these other entities that have a connection to some of these sites that you are working with, correct?
Right. That's exactly right. And, you know, if we look really briefly at sort of the history of archaeology and anthropology, going way back to the early part of the 20th century, people were doing work in a more comprehensive way. So if, for example, someone wanted to understand some aspect of Southwestern Pueblo culture, they would go and talk to the Pueblo communities, and then they might figure out a way to do some archaeology along with that. So, you know, anthropology in that sense was a much more integrated field. As we got into the 40s, 50s, 60s, and the 70s, a type of archaeology that came to be called new archaeology came on, and there was this move to make our studies more scientific and to really focus on chronology, dating, sourcing, all these things that I think to this day are part of the strength of this field. But what happened in that transition is most archaeologists stopped communicating very actively with indigenous peoples and with the folks whose heritage they were trying to study. And that sort of became the realm of cultural anthropology. And, you know, without doing a really long discourse into this, you know, departments of anthropology sort of became what we would say today siloed, right? So here are the archaeologists, here are the cultural anthropologists, here are the people who study physical anthropology. And some of that integration was lost. And so I think archaeology really suffered, in my view, in trying to understand, you know, the very rich heritage of North America and other places. So over 30 years more, we've been circling back and trying to sort this out. We've also had, you know, really amazing legislation passed, the NAGPRA law that we've talked about a lot, Scott, the Native American Grave Protection and Repatriation Act, has really forced those archaeologists who didn't want to communicate and be in contact with tribes to do that. You know, this is the same for museum staff, to really have that dialogue about certainly, you know, human remains, but also the items of cultural patrimony and all the other materials that are very important to descendant communities, to tribal communities. So, you know, we've had sort of these larger waves, if you will, in our field, and we are definitely in a trend, and I don't think it's a passing trend, to empower indigenous communities to be part of the archaeology that we do nationwide. And this is something that's going to, in my opinion, take a few years to unfold and to really come to fruition. But at Archaeology Southwest, I think our founder and our president, Bill Doley, you know, and all of our staff are really committed to trying to be, you know, in the vanguard, trying to help lead this transition and be part of it. And so having team members like Ashley and Sky for me in our organization is just huge in that effort.
Right. And Paul Reed, you mentioned to me before we came on the other this morning, the four R's, which I wanted to talk about too this morning, and maybe we can go through them briefly with our other guests too, and maybe just run through the four R's quickly for us. And I'll ask our other guests, Ashley and Skylar, about what that means to them too.
Sure. And this is the sort of the philosophical underpinning for a tribal collaboration model that Ashley was talking about at the beginning. And briefly, those R's are relationship, responsibility, reciprocity, and redistribution. You know, and as Ashley and Sky are drafting this document with input from other staff members, you know, I think they want those four R's to form the core of it.
Right. Let's ask them and see. Ashley, let me start with you a little bit about these four R's and how much they are guiding some of the work that you and Skylar are doing on this document. How important are they?
Right. And so the four R's are not unique to us or to archaeology. It's a framework that's been used by academics and other disciplines. And that's actually where I found the four R's was, I believe, by in a sociology article. But I really thought that it was a great approach to working with tribes. And so in indigenous country, we often hear the phrase, all my relatives or all my relations. And so at powwows or celebrations or gatherings, I hear that a lot. And I think it's a nod to the indigenous understanding that we are all related. We're all related as humans, but we're also related to our more than human kin, plants, animals, and the land. And there's this indigenous philosophy or ontology in which indigenous people view the world as, and the universe really, as made up of relationships. And so we view relationships as the foundation to tribal collaboration. And so to be a good relative as archaeologists, we need to ask ourselves what that means. What does it mean to be in relationship with the tribes whose heritage we're working with? The other R is responsibility. Also points out that as scientists, we have a responsibility to work with descendant communities, and we have a responsibility to listen to them, to incorporate their values, their needs, and their desires into our work. The last two R's, reciprocity. In a lot of indigenous communities, it's really important that if you take something, you give something in return. And so we also talk about how to fairly compensate our Indigenous collaborators for the time and energy that they give to us when they work collaboratively on projects. And then the last R, redistribution, is something that our organization wants to think about. How do we redistribute the resources, the wealth of our organization? How do we redistribute those things back to Indigenous communities to build capacity and help them as a good relative should?
Very good. Thank you very much. Skylar, I want to kind of talk to you a little bit about the same ideas, your thoughts about these four R's and the work that, you are doing with Ashley and others at Archaeology Southwest towards this tribal collaboration model that that you all are working on. Share your thoughts with us, please.
Yeah, so the model essentially is the philosophy behind the way we collaborate and the way we work with Indigenous peoples. And so it's meant to sort of instill just a way of being in a relationship with our collaborators and with each other as well. And it underpins this idea that relationship building is just as important as the collaborative projects that we'll be doing. And so we like to say that relationship building is a goal in and of itself, and that it's not a step in a process to reach some sort of end. And I think that really is one of the main takeaways from the model, is that we're trying to build relationships that are very robust and that are mutually beneficial, and also that recognize, you know, that this is more than just at the end of the day, it's more than just a project or a paper, something like that, and also that we see it as a way to sort of improve the way that archaeology is in relationship with, you know, the Indigenous community in the Southwest, but perhaps also in North America and beyond.
Sure. Sure. Understood. Thank you. And Skylar, I want to ask you, I want to do a follow-up too and ask you about, when we talk about relationships, I would think that trust enters into that as well from both sides, right? And the groups that you're working with have to trust you, and you need to trust them. And I think that's all part of this process, is it not?
Yeah, trust is definitely a huge part of a successful collaboration. And one of the sort of implications of the four R's is that it takes time to build up trust and respect. It takes time to create a reciprocal relationship and to learn what your responsibilities are in a relationship. And so I think that inherent investment of time and the taking the time to build the relationship is where you build that trust. And that is one of the things that's just sort of naturally in place in the model.
Sure. Thank you very much. And I think Ashley said at the beginning of the broadcast about maybe the contentious history that has been in the past between archaeology and Indigenous groups and peoples and things along that line. And so that's got to be an important thing, too, to get over. And Ashley, let me ask you this kind of the similar question about trust and forming these relationships and just making sure there's some mutual trust, I guess, back and forth. I mean, you really can't go much further if you don't have that at the starting gate, I would think.
Absolutely. And actually, the way I first learned about archaeology was in the context of the Red Power, the American Indian Movement. And I won't get into the details of that, but it was basically part of the civil rights movement of the late 60s and 1970s. And there was a group of Indigenous activists from the cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul area. And they actually went to an ongoing archaeological excavation north of the cities in Minnesota. And as an act of protest, The activists started filling in, backfilling the excavation because, you know, as we've mentioned, Indigenous people were really tired of scientists working on their sites and with their cultural material and their ancestral remains without any input or collaboration. And so even today, I'll talk to Native people and if they learn that I work in archaeology, that might actually put a bad taste in their mouth because of past occurrences between Indigenous peoples and archaeologists. And so I think archaeology as a discipline has come a really long way. Paul mentioned the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA, which was passed in 1990. And yeah, I think like over the last few decades since then, there has been a lot of work done to rebuild trust between the scientific community and Indigenous people.
Right. And as we've talked before, too, with Paul Reed, Ashley Thompson, it also helps, I think, for some of these Native American groups and tribal governments and Pueblo governments to have a seat at the table and maybe even a louder voice when it comes to talking about some of these things that maybe they feel they haven't had in the past, but maybe their voice is getting louder now. And that's, I think, very important thing to discuss as well. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I honestly think that like, it's the right and fair thing to do, right? To listen to tribes about how they envision their cultural material, their archaeological sites, and how they want to see those things treated and taken care of moving forward.
Right. Thank you. Skylar, let me come back to you, Skylar Begay, and ask you kind of the same question to chime in about tribal voices and that maybe they haven't been the loudest voices in the room, unfortunately, over some of these really important issues that affect them, their ancestors, their ancestry, their cultural history, and some of those things. I think it's important that they are heard, and it sounds like some of these maybe collaborations would allow that to happen going forward. Skylar, let me hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it's important that Indigenous people have the opportunity to tell their own stories about their culture and about their history and their heritage, and that we take less of an approach of interpreting those histories for them. And I think, you know, collaboration is a way to get people to use their own voice and tell their own stories in their own way. And then also on larger scales, when it comes to Indigenous nations, not only in archaeology, but also in the protection of public lands that are often cultural landscapes and the homes of Indigenous peoples, that they have a voice and they have a say and they have a equal place at the table with the federal government and state governments and municipal governments. When it comes to the management of those places, because they know how to take care of them, and it's their home, and you know, often it was taken away from them or they were removed forcibly, and so it's only right that they get the opportunity to have that seat at the table and have that voice. And as a nonprofit organization, it's not really our place to facilitate that, but as advocates, I think we can use our platform and our voice to raise their voices and also to just help out in any way we can.
Sure. Well, and certainly having them as part of the conversation is an important part of this too, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And I think one of the important aspects of this collaboration model is that not only are we trying to include them in ongoing projects, but we're also trying to just form relationships with them that we aren't coming to them saying, hey, this is what we want to do. You know, we would like to say, what would you like to do? What kind of projects would you like to do? And so including Indigenous communities and nations from the very outset of a project, even to like the very conception of the idea.
Sure. Thank you very much. And to me, Paul Reed, that sounds like a relatively new perspective, but maybe you'll correct me if I'm wrong, to try to get the other point of view before you even start a project.
No, it is new, Scott. I personally don't think it should be new. And I think,
right,
again, we have sort of glimpses of true collaboration and cooperation in the past. But typically, you know, this gets back to the colonial issues, and, you know, archaeologists have gone into indigenous communities and extracted information via excavation of sites or being on lands, looking at collections, you know, and then cultural anthropologists have historically, at least, gone into communities to extract ethnographic cultural information. So what we're really trying hard to do is to step away from this notion of extracting information and data from people and turning it around and saying that, you know, there's a broad range of interesting issues in the world. How might we approach that? And, you know, we do have some ongoing work that wasn't framed within the idea of a true collaboration model. So, you know, and those are things, again, that there are attempts to make midstream corrections and to bring those more in line with our model. But I think certainly as we look forward, all of the new work that we're going to be undertaking is going to involve a substantial effort to see what are the issues, what are the concerns of indigenous communities. If we want to study Zuni Pueblo heritage at some level, what is the input of the Zuni Tribal Historic Preservation Officer, the Zuni Council, Zuni elders, for example? The other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, this, for us at Archaeology Southwest, there is, you know, as I actually said, a very strong research component to this. But over the last 10 years, we've also really stepped into and tried to have some impact in the realm of advocacy. So this, you know, the work that we've talked about a lot on the show, Scott, about protecting Greater Chaco through different measures, has involved really active partnerships with, you know, the All Pueblo Council of Governors, the Pueblos of Zuni, Acoma, Santa Clara, and others, you know, frequent contact with Navajo Nation. So, you know, so we're kind of hitting this, approaching this at Archaeology Southwest from a research model in part, but also all the rest of the work that we do, public outreach, advocacy. These are very important, you know, issues and sort of areas of our work as well. So the goal is to just raise participation of indigenous communities in all of the different things that we do and make sure those voices are part of things that we're trying to bring about.
Right, right. And Paul Reed, are you hopeful that maybe from the work that Ashley and Skylar are doing on this tribal collaboration model, that maybe other archaeological facilities will follow suit and maybe follow the lead and make up some of their own models to follow what you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, as Ashley said at the outset, we didn't invent the four R's. We're trying to pick up a really good model that's been used elsewhere. In the field of archaeology, you know, we talked with Kellen Throgmorton from Crow Canyon last month about the work that Crow Canyon is doing to work with indigenous communities. So, yeah, this is a broad movement. And I think we're hoping at Archaeology Southwest that we will, you know, be on the leading edge of this. And that's something that we're intending to do, and that other groups will follow. There is a whole lot of archaeology that falls into other categories that we're also trying to have positive impact on. A lot of the contract work or cultural resource management work follows pretty stringent, you know, BLM and other agency requirements. So part of what I do as well is to work with those agencies and how we approach, you know, cultural resource work in the future and how to get a very strong indigenous and tribal voice into all those processes as well.
Very good. Well, Paul Reed, thank you very much. And everybody, I'm afraid we are out of time this morning, but it's been a great informative conversation for me, and I really appreciate all of you being with me this morning. So Paul Reed, Ashley Thompson, Skylar Begay, all of you, thank you very much for being with me this morning and sharing your thoughts and your insights with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. My guest this morning here on KSJE. KSJE and San Juan College present the Student Success Coaching Tip of the Week. Week 11, study with friends and study groups. Encouraging friends to study with you can make everything more fun and productive. Ask your classmates to study with you at a certain time and location. Studying together in person can help you hold each other accountable, too. You don't want to be that person who cancels or doesn't show, right? Teaching a friend or family member or even your pet the material is a great way to see how well you know it. When you explain it to someone else, you'll have a better grasp of which information you already have mastered and which information you need to study. The Student Success Coaching Tip of the Week, presented by KSJE and the Student Achievement Center at San Juan College. KSJE is supported by the Farmington Museum. What if you could jump into the world of wild crats and swing through the trees like a monkey, or hunt like a dragonfish? Now you can. Wild Crats, Creature Power, and Ocean Adventure Museum Exhibit, opening September 24th through January 7th at the Farmington Museum. Tickets at farmingtonmuseum.org. KSJE is supported by the San Juan Symphony, presenting The Majesty of Mozart, Saturday, November 5th at 7:30 p.m. in Farmington, and Sunday, November 6th at 3 p.m. in Durango. The concert features a combined 160-plus voice choir from Durango, Farmington, and Fort Lewis College, four soloists, and Mozart's Requiem Mass, his final musical statement. Find out more at sanjuansymphony.org, The Majesty of Mozart, November 5th and 6th. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did, and if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.